Welcome to the show. Virtually every American who gets a job is required to fill out a form I-9 as a condition of employment. The title of form I-9 is Employment Eligibility Verification, and here's what it says about the form I-9 on the website of the U.S. Immigration Service. Quote, use form I-9, Employment Eligibility Verification, to verify the identity and employment authorization of individuals hired for employment in the United States. So, are we to take from that American citizens are not allowed to work in this country without federal government approval? Like so many controversial or problematic areas of federal law, the law pertaining to Form I-9 does not say what the public and employers believe it says. Today, I'm going to show you that what the law says is not remotely what the government propaganda tells you or what employers claim the law requires.
The Dr. Reality Vodcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. I've been reading law for more than 3 decades. My interest in the law began with federal income tax, but over the years has branched out into many areas. Perhaps the most important thing I've learned from 3 decades of reading federal law is this. Within the states of the Union, the Constitution grants Congress very little authority. To get around that limitation, legislative draftsmen have developed a number of different ways to draft laws so that the people of the states of the Union are fooled, literally hoodwinked, into thinking certain laws apply to them when in fact they do not. That is true of quite a number of federal legal schemes, including the income tax. My decades of research into income tax law resulted in me publishing Income Tax Shattering the Myths, which is the only comprehensive compendium in existence that details how the federal government has wrongly convinced hundreds of millions of Americans that income tax applies to them when the law says no such thing. As a quick example, unless one has read Income Tax Shattering the Myths, one would not know that since 1913, when the income tax was enacted, the Secretary of the Treasury has said in 11 official documents that Form 1040 is to be used exclusively by non-resident aliens with U.S. source income or the non-resident alien's domestic agent. More strikingly, there is nothing in the statutes, the regs, or Treasury decisions in the 111-year history of the income tax saying anyone other than a non-resident alien or the non-resident alien's domestic agent is to file Form 1040. Before we get rolling on the I-9, I want to let you know I'm running a special on my website, drreality.news, drreality.news. Any order containing Income Tax Shattering the Myths gets free shipping by using the code TARIFFS. More on that later. The law concerning Form I-9 is found in Title 8 of the United States Code, which is entitled Aliens and Nationality. Accordingly, let's begin our inquiry by looking at Title 8. Here, you can see the chapters within Title 8. The ones with a green line through them have been repealed. If you take a moment to read down the titles of the chapters, you'll see there is nothing in Title 8 that has anything to do with native-born American citizens, except for a single section that discusses what one can do to legally renounce his or her citizenship. Other than the part about renouncing citizenship, there is absolutely nothing in Title 8 that has anything to do with native-born Americans. So then, if there is nothing in Title 8 that pertains to native-born Americans, how can Title 8 contain a requirement that native-born Americans must receive government approval to work? Let's go a bit further by looking at the area of Title 8 in which the I-9 law is found. That's Chapter 12, Subchapter 2, Part 8, entitled General Provisions. The specific area is sections 1324 through 1324D. As one might expect in Title 8, those sections deal exclusively with aliens. Right here, you can see section 1324A, which is the section that controls everything about the use of Form I-9. Let's see what it says. The only two things we need to look at are the title of subsection A and the first sentence of the section. The title of subsection A is Making Employment of Unauthorized Aliens Unlawful. In my video on why the Corporate Transparency Act does not apply to citizens of the States of the Union, I pointed out that while the federal government absolutely has authority to combat money laundering, it does not have any authority to conscript the citizens of the States of the Union into doing so. In other words, the government is free to do it, but it can't make you a part of its efforts. Think about it this way. Your local police department can engage in activities to enforce anti-drug laws and stop drug dealing, but it can't place that duty on you. Whether we're talking about stopping money laundering or stopping unauthorized aliens from working in the United States, the only party that has the responsibility for doing that is the government. If the government could compel you to participate in its enforcement efforts, yeah, where would that end? Because the government can't compel American citizens to participate in its enforcement efforts, instead it has chosen to knowingly, willfully, and intentionally trick the American people into doing it. Isn't that nice? Before I continue, a quick note. If you enjoy this kind of knowledge that you'll never get from any source other than this channel, please take a moment to subscribe and hit the like button so the algorithms show this content to more people. Also, for a limited time, you can get free shipping on any of my books as long as Income Tax Shattering the Myths is included in your order. Simply use the code TARIFFS at checkout. I'll share that again at the end. Now, let's examine the first sentence of 1324A, which reads, quote, "It is unlawful for a person or other entity." Let's focus on the word entity for a moment. If we scroll down to A7, we find entity defined this way. For the purpose of this section, the term entity includes an entity in any branch of the federal government. I've discussed the word includes many times in these presentations, as used in statutory law. Includes means things not enumerated are to be considered a part of the definition if they fall within the class established by the words of the definition. So then, what is the class established in this definition? That's stated clearly when it says any branch of the federal government. In other words, it means the entire federal government without exception, because Congress is applying this section to all three branches, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. Congress needed to make that clear because many statutes imposing a requirement on the government cannot be constitutionally imposed on all branches. By the definition of entity in 1324A, Congress is expressly stating its intent that the I-9 requirement applies to all three branches of the federal government. Understanding that, now let's turn our attention to the unusual grammar of the sentence when it says it is unlawful for a person or other entity. Person or other entity. Let's remove the word entity and replace it with its definition. If we do that, it reads this way. Person or other federal government branch. Because other is not defined by Congress for use in the statute, we have to find its meaning in the English dictionary. When we do, we find the only dictionary definition that remotely makes sense is additional. The only synonym that makes sense is another. Let's put each of those in place of the word other and read the clause again. Person or additional federal government branch. Or person or another federal government branch. Why did the legislative draftsman include the word other? They did so because they needed to link person and entity without the public, that's you, understanding what they did or why they did it. As used in the sentence we're discussing, other is something called a reciprocal pronoun. A reciprocal pronoun is used when two things have a mutual relationship. In this case, the mutual relationship is they are government entities. Allow me to flesh this out for you. Person, as used here, means an individual or organization acting in the capacity of the federal government. It does not embrace anyone in the private sector. As such, let's examine the definition of person as used in 1324A. You can find that at 1101B3, and it reads, "The term person means an individual or an organization." That, of course, means we now have to know what organization means. Before I share that with you, I want to let you know that after more than three decades reading federal law, I can assure you that when the law is written so that you have to seek out definition after definition after definition in order to find the true meaning of a provision, that's done intentionally to bamboozle you. So, what is the definition of organization? Well, that's found at 1101A28 and reads, "The term organization means, but is not limited to, an organization, corporation, company, partnership, association, trust, foundation, or fund, and includes a group of persons, whether or not incorporated, permanently or temporarily associated together with a joint action on any subject or subjects." At this point, let's take a moment to recap. Title 8 of the United States Code has nothing to do with Americans. Nada. Zero. The I-9 requirement is within Title 8. The government cannot conscript citizens of the states of the Union into enforcing or participating in the process of enforcing federal law. Being required to use a form I-9 as a condition requisite to hiring someone would constitute being forced to participate in the enforcement of federal law. The first sentence of 1324A speaks of person or other entities. In that sentence, the legislative draftsman used other as a reciprocal pronoun to show there is a mutual relationship between person and entity. Person, as defined for use in 1324A, includes organizations. Organization is defined to include corporations, companies, partnerships, associations, etc. Accordingly, for the purpose of Section 1324A, person is not limited to human beings, but includes various legal entities. In fact, contextually, it makes no sense to consider that in 1324A, person means a human. Let's read 1324A colloquially and see how it fits. A human being or other federal government branch. Obviously, that doesn't work. So now we're left with organizations. What might the organizations be that the legislative draftsman meant by person in 1324A? There is only one meaning that checks all the boxes. That is instrumentalities. So what are instrumentalities? A good working definition is this. A government instrumentality is an organization created by statute to perform governmental functions, but does not have the full power of government, such as police authority, taxation, or eminent domain. Examples of federal instrumentalities are the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, more commonly known as FDIC, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, and many, many others. Keep in mind that the word other was placed in the key sentence of Section 1324A to establish a mutual relationship between the person and the three branches of government. The mutual relationship is that while instrumentalities are not technically within any of the three branches, they are, at all times, under the jurisdiction of Congress. That means when Congress applied the I-9 requirement to the entire government, it created a special definition of person in conjunction with the word other, used as a reciprocal pronoun, so that the requirement also embraced federal instrumentalities. With that covered, I want to share a few thoughts with you. First, Section 1324A does not require anyone to use a Form I-9 other than the three branches of the United States government and its instrumentalities, period. Full stop. Second, using the word other as a reciprocal pronoun is archaic. It's virtually unheard of in modern English. The sentence we've been discussing, which controls everything else in the section, wasn't written in the 1890s. It was written in the 1990s. My point is that a legislative draftsman worked very hard to come up with wordsmithing that sentence so the statutory scheme retains its constitutionality while at the same time fooling everyone who reads it. Let me give you an example of similar wordsmithing as it appears in tax law. This is part of a sentence straight out of an income tax statute. All persons, in whatever capacity acting, having the control, receipt, custody, disposal, or payment of any items of gross income from sources within the United States of any non-resident alien individual. In 1962, Congress passed a law taking that lengthy description and distilling it down to the term U.S. person. Of course, good-hearted Americans who, when they see U.S. person in tax law, immediately say, "Oh, U.S. person! Well, hell, that's me, because I'm an American!" They have no idea that to be a U.S. person, they have to have control, receipt, custody, disposal, or payment of U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. How fucked up is that ploy? Not long ago, I put out a presentation discussing the Social Security Act. I'll put the link down in the notes. In that presentation, I pointed out that because there is zero subject matter jurisdiction in the Constitution for Congress to enact the Social Security Act, Congress made it applicable solely for federal possessions and territories using what is called Congress's territorial jurisdiction. I showed the special definition of state that limited the act to the possessions and territories, and even showed the legislation that removed Hawaii and Alaska from the definition of state once they became states of the Union. My point is that congressional efforts to intentionally mislead the American people into believing laws apply to them that absolutely do not has been taking place since the early 20th century. "But Dave," some people cry, "if these things were true, lawyers would know about it." If only, my friends, if only. I've been speaking about the truth of the income tax, which is that it has never been imposed on ordinary hardworking Americans, for more than three decades. In that time, I've spoken with hundreds of attorneys, including tax attorneys. It may shock you to hear that in those three decades, I've never met an attorney, including tax attorneys, who've read tax law. Several weeks ago, I was speaking with a tax attorney. I was explaining that the payroll withholding law does not apply to Americans earning domestic income in the private sector. He, of course, scoffed at that. Then I took him to 26 U.S.C. Section 3401C, which defines employee for the purpose of payroll withholding. Here's what it says. "For the purpose of this chapter, the term employee includes an officer, employee, or elected official of the United States, a state, or any political subdivision thereof, or the District of Columbia, or any agency or instrumentality of any one or more of the foregoing." That definition describes only government workers. There is nothing in the law that mentions or even hints at workers in the private sector. Because he had never read the law, when he heard it, he became completely flustered and made up an excuse to immediately end the discussion. And he's a tax attorney who had never read the law. As I mentioned a moment ago, that experience isn't a one-off or an unusual occurrence. In my 30 years, I have never spoken to an attorney who has ever read tax law. I wish I could tell you that reality is limited to what perhaps we can call establishment lawyers, but sadly, it's not. Even attorneys who claim to be fighting for personal liberty don't know what the law says about income tax, and worse yet, refuse to read the law. As an example of that is the so-called constitutional attorney, Chris Ann Hall, who has for years refused to read income tax shatteringness, despite countless followers of hers asking her to do so. In an exchange with me several years ago, she told me she doesn't need to read Income Tax Shattering the Myths because she's an attorney, and as such, she knows the income tax applies to everybody. I'm not sure whether she was speaking from fear or ignorance or arrogance, but she damaged her credibility with the tens of thousands of people who've read Income Tax Shattering the Myths and know the truth. Back to the I-9. Because the I-9 has no applicability outside the federal government, why do attorneys tell their private sector clients to get an I-9 from every new hire? First, just as with income tax, attorneys never read the law. They read some government propaganda, government publication, that cites a few provisions that superficially appear to support the false narrative the I-9 applies to private sector firms. And the attorneys just run with that. And, of course, when an attorney tells company executives, this is what the law requires, none of the executives do a lick of independent research to see if the lawyer is correct. They just do what they've been told. You know, like children. The second reason attorneys tell their clients to get an I-9 from all new hires is because of Section 132A(a)(3), which reads, a person or entity that establishes that it has complied in good faith with the requirements of subsection B of this section, which means getting an I-9, with respect to the hiring, recruiting, or referral for employment of an alien in the United States, has established an affirmative defense that the person or entity has not violated paragraph 1A. In other words, if they get an I-9 from everyone, and they are later accused of hiring an alien who is not authorized to work in the United States, they automatically, as a matter of law, have an affirmative defense. So, what is an affirmative defense? An affirmative defense is a legal principle that allows a person who has violated a law to acknowledge they violated it, but not be punished for the violation. So, in context of this issue, if the immigration folks find a guy who is not authorized to work in the U.S., working at a company, but the company is able to show it has an I-9 from the guy, the company is off the hook, as if the violation never occurred. It doesn't take a genius to see why companies find that appealing. Since they don't know anything about what the law says, they latch onto the fact that having an I-9 from every worker means they won't be penalized, even if they do have aliens working for them who shouldn't be working in the U.S. I take a different approach. Whether it's income tax, the Corporate Transparency Act with its BOI reporting requirement, the Form I-9, and any number of other subjects, if the government contacts me, my approach is to tell the government, I know what the law actually says, and I'm more than happy to go to court and put the law and the facts into evidence for everyone to see. I say it politely and professionally in writing. While I am polite, the message is clear. If you push this, I will blow your scam out of the water. Since that's the last thing they want, they go away. With these legal scams, the government has fooled virtually everyone. In other words, the masses have bought the government's bullshit hook, line, and sinker and are doing exactly what the government wants. Because of that, the government is willing to walk away from the tiny percentage of people who know the truth and are willing to stand upon it. Or, phrased another way, the government is happy to leave one informed person alone in order to keep 100,000 people fooled and ignorantly compliant. In my presentation about the Corporate Transparency Act, I offered my audience a letter they can send to the government if they are contacted for a BOI report. That letter isn't free, but it's also not expensive. I'll offer the same thing here concerning the I-9. If you own a business and don't want to screw around with I-9s, I have a letter you can send if the immigration folks contact you about an I-9 issue. You can send it, and they will leave you alone. If you want that letter in your files, shoot me an email at dave@drreality.news and let me know you want the I-9 letter. Let's talk about the implication of signing an I-9. First off, and to be clear, signing an I-9 does not create the same kind of damaging implications one creates when signing tax forms. For those who haven't read Income Tax Shattering the Myths, let me take a moment to blow your mind. When you sign a Form W-4, you are attesting, under penalty of perjury, that you are a non-resident alien receiving U.S. source income in the form of wages paid to you by a government entity. When you sign a Form W-9, you are attesting, under penalty of perjury, that the money you're receiving does not belong to you, but you are receiving U.S. source income that belongs to a foreign person for whom you are acting as the U.S. agent. As you might imagine, those false declarations create some pretty nasty legal presumptions. In fact, those false declarations are what empowers the IRS to go after ordinary hardworking Americans who do not owe income tax, but have sworn under penalty of perjury, they do. The I-9 does not create that kind of inaccurate, harmful legal presumption. On the other hand, I-9 participation feeds into the construct that Americans living and working in the states of the Union do not have the unalienable right to earn a living. Instead, the only way they can work is to provide documentary proof on a government form showing they are authorized to work. If I may state my view on that succinctly, fuck that. We've covered a lot of ground, so let me wrap up by telling you about the special offer I'm running on my website. Right now, and for a limited time, I'm offering free shipping on any order from my drreality.news website if the order contains a copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths. I'm going to suggest you purchase the 4-pack containing Income Tax Shattering the Myths, the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, the Business Handbook for Forms W-9, 1099, and U.S. Person, and Body Science. The first reason to get the 4-pack is the price is already deeply discounted from purchasing the 4 items individually. The second reason is that, in addition to it being deeply discounted, you get free shipping by using the code TARIFFS. Here's a quick overview of each item in the 4-pack. Income Tax Shattering the Myths. You already know what that's going to give you, which is mountains of incontrovertible proof that the income tax has never been imposed on ordinary hardworking Americans like you. The Business Guide to Payroll Withholding is a 13-page item intended to help workers convey the truth we've been discussing today to the company for which they work in order to ask them to follow the law and stop withholding. Not everyone is articulate or can recall legal citations on the spur of the moment, so I wrote the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding to help with that. It's also a great primer if you want to wake someone up to the truth of the income tax. The Business Handbook for Form W-9, 1099, and U.S. Person is also 13 pages and is intended to help self-employed people communicate to those with whom they do business why they are not required to furnish a Form W-9 and why the person or entity paying them is not legally required, and in fact is not legally permitted, to file a Form 1099. The handbook is also a great primer if you want to wake someone up to the truth of the income tax. Body Science is my groundbreaking work on human physiology that is the key to what so many people say they want, which is to turn around the health of the American people. Sadly, the vast majority of Americans prefer to get their views on nutritional physiology from a corrupt media rather than a physiologist who tears down the false establishment health narratives and gives you the science of getting and staying healthy presented in a way everyone can understand. If you're sincere about getting and staying healthy and you want that for people you care about, you need to read Body Science. I practice what I preach. I adhere to everything you'll discover in Body Science. At 65, I'm as healthy as I was at 25. I'm in perfect health. No chronic diseases, no big pharma products, and I haven't been sick a day in years. During the COVID event, I never wore a mask, never social distanced, shook hands with people, hugged my friends, lived life as I always had, and I never got COVID. That's how your immune system will operate if you follow what you learn in Body Science. So go to drreality.news and pick up a copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths or the 4-pack. Remember to use the coupon code TARIFFS to get free shipping on any order containing Income Tax Shattering the Myths. Also, purchasing any of my writings helps me to continue to be here for you with these revealing and thought-provoking presentations. If you found today's content intriguing and compelling, please help spread the word by sharing this video far and wide. Thanks for sharing your time with me today. I hope you consider it time well spent.